ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
This is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there, my name's Matt Brand. Welcome to the program and happy New Year's Eve. On today's show, a trip across to the Kimberley to see how that region is going after Cyclone Hayley.
The shelter they were in have sustained roof damage and there's obviously trees down everywhere, as everyone's probably already seen. So, yeah, there's a fair bit, but it'll take us, you know, take us days to really, I guess, get around everywhere and figure it all out.
And what were the biggest stories of the year for the NT Country Hour? In the second half, I'll share with you the top five stories that you clicked on in 2025. It's our last show of the year. Can you believe it? As always, we're broadcasting right across the territory on the ABC. We're on the TV via Channel 25, and g'day if you've tuned in via our podcast. The last live export ship for 2025, it sailed out of Darwin Port on Monday night, bound for Indonesia, and it caps off what's been a really big year for the live cattle trade. I sat down with Patrick Moran from the NT Livestock Exporters Association, who says exporters worked right through the Christmas period to get the job done.
Well, Matt, thanks for having me, and Merry Christmas to all the Country Hour listeners. It was a great year numbers-wise. We're really firing on all cylinders. So up until the end of November, we had about 390,000 head out of the Darwin port. Assuming 60 or 70,000 in the month of December, which is a reasonable assumption, that puts us at about 450,000 out of Darwin Port for the year, which, while it's not record-breaking, it's close.
Right up there.
There were some big years in 15, 16. I think 16 was over 500,000, so we'll be close. But what it shows is that the industry has sort of returned to a peak after a couple of lean years there in the middle.
And huge demand from Indonesia.
Yep.
Tell us what's happening at that end.
That's the bright spot, is that there's no sort of end in sight as far as demand. The Indonesian government has a very ambitious free nutritious meals program. Just last month, we had the ambassador, the Indonesian ambassador in Darwin, reiterating the fact that they will basically take as many cattle as we can give them. So that's what we're working towards. And there's no reason to think that next year won't be better than this year.
And so the last ship went out on Monday night. I always assumed boats had to be delivering cattle into Indonesia before January 1.
No, there's no arbitrary deadline.
Right, with the permits.
January deadline. Okay. The permits are good technically till the end of the year. There was some talk that the Indonesian government might roll over permits. So if importers had excess capacity, they could use that into January. I haven't really heard that that's happened on the ground. So we're sort of in the normal permit stance, which is that they should be released mid-January.
Right. That's the understanding at the moment?
That's our understanding. Yeah.
So are you expecting any boats to go out between now and the middle of Jan?
It's unlikely, unless permits are issued, say, in the next week, because just the realities of booking ships and getting together cattle and that sort of thing.
So the live export trade can actually have a small break?
Yes. And I think it's a well-earned break this year. It's been a very busy year. And as you said, I know Ace and Frontier were working up until, Boxing Day and the day after. So they deserve a break.
How do you think 2026 is shaping up?
Yeah, look, it's an exciting time for livestock export, for cattle in the top, and the cattle industry in the top end. I think everyone is optimistic. Like we said, Indonesian demand's good. However, there are some risks to the industry. Biosecurity is an ongoing risk. We deal with that day in, day out. It's always a concern. And more than that, regulation is sort of another thing that can really have a devastating impact on the industry.
Have you been able to load boats at night yet and get biosecurity
No.
ticks?
So since 2023, the federal department basically banned biosecurity inspections on livestock vessels at nighttime. Now, the impact of that is if a boat gets into the wharf after sunset, it cannot be inspected, therefore it cannot be loaded. So it basically just sits at the dock for 12 hours. It's been a huge barrier on sort of growing the trade and moving past sort of the numbers we saw this year. So if we want to load more cattle, we need to take away those artificial barriers. Currently, there's a review being done by the department on whether biosecurity inspections can be completed at nighttime. And Matt, as you know, those boats inside are lit up like a skyscraper. So I, for the life of me, cannot figure out why it would make any difference whatsoever whether the inspection was done at night or during the day.
So you might get some answers in 2026, maybe.
So we're told that in February, the department will release its review, okay. And at that point, we should have a decision.
And just finally, anything else that you're looking forward to in 2026?
Barama Export Yards have some stuff going on out there. We're working with the NT government, which has been very supportive, Ministers Maley and Burgoyne and the Chief Minister, to help us acquire the back lot there, mm-hmm. which over time should give us some extra capacity, overflow capacity, in the event of an emergency or something like that, that would come in handy. And you could even put some more buffalo out there or something like that. So that's really exciting for the association.
Oh, that was Dr. Ross's wish,
yes.
I think.
Well, Dr. Ross might get his wish. We'll see how we go.
All the best for the new year.
All right. Thank you, Matt.
And that is Patrick Moran, who's the chief executive of the NT Livestock Exporters Association. It'll take a few weeks for the numbers to be finalised, but at this stage, it looks like the Darwin Port exported about 450,000 head of cattle for the calendar year, which is huge. And as for prices for NT cattle producers, the year has ended with feeder steers fetching between sort of $4 and $4.50 a kilo, which is really good money. Now, I was just reading the Jakarta Globe, as you do, and I found an article that I think will be of interest to the cattle industry. I'll share some of that with you now. So the Jakarta Globe is reporting that the Indonesian government is considering easing restrictions on live cattle imports to secure domestic meat supplies while moving to tighten controls on frozen beef imports to balance prices and support local value creation. Jakarta Globe's quoted Indonesia's chief food affairs minister, who says the option under review would prioritise imports of live cattle rather than frozen meat. He says if we want empowerment, then we open up live cattle imports so there is added value. He said importing live animals would help create jobs, support cattle fattening programs, and increase demand for animal feed such as grass and fodder. So there you go. The Indonesian government, super keen on live cattle imports and tightening controls on frozen beef imports. That could be an interesting one to watch in 2026. As Patrick Moran says, at the moment, everything is shaping up very nicely.
Charles Vaughan here, Australian Cattle Enterprises and Charles Vaughan Veterinary Services, are here today at Berrima Export Yards, and you're listening to The Country Hour.
It is 22 to 1, and this is the last Country Hour of the year. And we've got some damn news.
Damn.
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 Damn. Damn.
So yesterday we were talking about the Darwin River Dam and how it was getting very close to going over the spillway. This afternoon, as we go to air, Darwin River Dam is sitting at 99.82% capacity. It is so, so close. And yesterday afternoon, Power and Water Corp, maybe they were listening to the Country Hour, I don't know, but they put out a statement about the dam. And PwC says the dam's now expected to reach full capacity and begin spilling over the dam wall around this new year period. It says, and I thought this was interesting, this will be the earliest spill on record since the dam wall was raised in 2010. So things are moving ahead of time for Darwin River Dam. The dam supplies about 85% of the greater Darwin region's drinking water. Power and Water Corp says with a spill likely to occur early in the wet season, the community are reminded that river levels downstream may rise quickly when the dam overflows, causing sudden changes in levels at road crossings and potential flood risks. And as we learnt yesterday from Haggis, when the dam overflows, there's some good cherubin to be had, which I didn't know. That's what I learned.
Join the ultimate party this New Year's Eve across the ABC with a massive lineup, including Melanie C, plus the famous Sydney Fireworks, audio described on the ABC Listen app.
Happy New Year!
On ABC TV and iView and the ABC Listen app.
Now, if you tuned in yesterday, you would have heard from James Brown, who runs the Signet Bay Pearl Farm north of Broome there in the Kimberley. That farm was in the direct path of Tropical Cyclone Hayley. Now, that cyclone, in the end, it crashed into the Kimberley coast sort of late yesterday afternoon. It hit the coast as a Category 3 cyclone. It went a bit south of that Pearl Farm. And James says his team is still assessing the damage.
Well, they're out there now, actually just trying to clear the roads so that we can get around and assess everything. But, you know, there's definitely some damage. Even the structures sort of immediately outside the shelter they were in have sustained roof damage, and there's obviously trees down everywhere, as everyone's probably already seen. So, yeah, there's a fair bit, but it'll take us, you know, take us days to really, I guess, get around everywhere and figure it all out.
I was going to ask you about that. I mean, how long will it take to fully assess what damage there is? Because the Signet Bay Pearl Farm, it's quite a large operation, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, even the roads up there, there's a fair few kilometres of roads that, you know, we need to get the heavy machinery out to clear the trees and such so that we can actually get around the property. And then, of course, you know, once we can clear the roads, then we can get the boats out to actually get out to the farm and start having a look out there. So it'll be a little while. It's only that main farm in Signet Bay that is, you know, has probably seen any real issue from this event. The farms we've got around Broome should be fine, thankfully.
What sort of impact does an event like this have on the pearls?
Oh, look, until we get out there, it's hard to know. I mean, hopefully all your long lines are still in place, you know, any of the floating infrastructure. But because of the direction this came, you know, most of the wind was coming over the peninsula before it got to us. So, you know, it was relatively sheltered in the King Sound for the first front end of it until the eye passed, and then the wind would have swung around to a different direction. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that most of the actual farm infrastructure will be okay. It's the things like the, you know, the bigger vessels on cyclone moorings and the other vessels that are tied up and lashed down and all the rest of it. If any of those have actually moved or sustained any damage, then, you know, that could take us a fair while to actually get those repaired before we can get back onto the farm and start really doing the maintenance we need to do. So fingers crossed, it's sort of, you know, various steps. We're at step one, clear the roads. Step two, make sure the boats are all good. Well, step one, of course, is make sure everyone's okay, but we knew that all night. And once we've got boats back in the water and the crew out there, we'll start really getting a sense of how everything in the water fared.
You mentioned your staff, and I know that most of your staff were evacuated, but there was a few that did remain behind. They are okay? You just said that they are?
Yeah, we were able to stay in constant communication the entire time, which is really fortuitous. You know, we just had the whole management team and the team on the ground communicating constantly, really, just so everyone knew exactly what was going on and sharing any updates as they came through. It was, you know, in some ways it was good that the system sped up and crossed it earlier than expected. And so it meant that the people out there could actually see what was going on around them as the wind really picked up and peaked, as opposed to just, you know, hearing it in the dark. Would have been a little bit more daunting. But everyone, you know, everyone, including the surrounding communities, you know, a lot of people were streaming it live on Facebook. It was quite interesting to see just how many people were still up there and you know, different parts of the peninsula. Streaming a cyclone live, that's the modern world we're in, I guess.
But, it is the modern world, isn't it?
Yeah, obviously they couldn't get out, you know, to have a look around. It was still pretty savage when it did go dark, so we didn't really know. But our main village power, we know that's stayed on all night, which is really great. So, you know, most of our sort of key essential services seem to be okay at this stage.
That's James Brown, who's the Managing Director of the Cygnet Bay Pearl Farm, speaking to Kelly Gudgeon about Tropical Cyclone Hayley, which hit the coast there late yesterday. That system, is it bringing some moisture into the Northern Territory? I'll put that question to the Weather Bureau when we speak to them at 1:05. As always, if you've got a question that you want to put to the Bureau, send it through on that text line, which is 0487 99 1057. So you just heard there from James Brown from the Cygnet Bay Pearl Farm in the Kimberley. What was 2025 like for the Northern Territory's pearling industry? Well, in the NT Seafood Council's Year in Review, Tony Thiel from Pass Paley has written that 2025 marked another year of operational consistency across our pearl production activities, with output levels remaining steady despite ongoing workforce constraints. He says recruitment challenges persisted, particularly in sourcing qualified engineers, skippers and crew, reflecting broader industry trends. He says, nevertheless, our existing teams continue to demonstrate resilience and dedication, successfully maintaining production targets and service standards. He says the market for pearls has softened during 2025, driven by cooling global demand and increasing supply.
Hello there. My name's Norm Hedditch from Taruna Proprietary Limited, and we're Spanish mackerel fishermen in the Northern Territory, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
You might remember in 2019, more than 500,000 head of livestock perished during a nasty flood event in northwest Queensland, and that is still fresh in the mind of cattle producers in that region who, once again, are facing widespread flooding. Libby Harriman is a vet based in Hewarden and says after a week of wet weather, a lot of her clients are concerned about their young calves and older cows, but she hasn't heard of any widespread losses so far.
Yeah, so look, at this stage, I don't think, I'm praying that it's not going to be as catastrophic as 2019. It's not quite as cold as it was in 19. And at this stage, it looks like the water is going to run away quicker. Most of the adult cattle that perished in 19 died from exposure. So they sat around and shivered in cold, wet conditions for, you know, days on end. And when, you know, when they walked away, some walked away and some didn't. And the ones that were sort of under the pile of animals or, you know, suffered from the cold were the ones that succumbed to the conditions. You know, right now it's not quite that cold, so we're not seeing, you know, as many animals huddling together. A lot of producers have put in some high ground since 19, so the cattle can actually get out of the water. But, you know, as I said, you know, a lot of cattle are calving at the moment, so those young calves, they haven't got the body mass to stay warm. And if they can't get to high ground, you know, they're going to freeze and die, unfortunately.
Have you heard anything yet at this stage about livestock losses? You know, the mayor of the McKinley Shire said, you know, she was thinking maybe hundreds, if not thousands. Anecdotally, we've heard that potentially some losses could be worse than 2019. Have you heard anything in that space?
So in Huon and here, we're sort of on the cusp of the region. Definitely most of my producers here are okay. The few that I've spoken to further west, a lot of them, you know, they are very concerned, but I haven't heard of wide-scale losses as yet.
And in speaking with producers over this past week, a lot of people have said that some rainfall earlier in December has kind of helped improve the strength for the adult cattle, and it's helped them put on a bit of condition, and they're in a much better position than they were in 2019. So how much of a difference, I guess, does that little bit of rain, that green pick, that really nutrient-rich feed have in these situations?
Yeah, absolutely, Maddie. I think that is the stark contrast, you know, for, you know, this year compared to 19 and compared to the southwest floods. We're not going out of a true drought conditions. And yeah, that little bit of early rain, you know, has helped to strengthen the cattle, and they, you know, have that bit of body condition to to hold them through this period. You know, our primary concern, you know, in the post-flooding era is to get, you know, some food into the cattle. So, you know, fortunately, cattle do have a fair bit of reserve when they are in good order, and they can go a number of days without eating. So, you know, those younger cattle and the older cattle, they haven't got that body reserve. So they're the ones that will succumb. But sooner we can get, you know, some good dry feed out to them and get them on some high ground, the more chance they have of surviving.
That is Hewarden vet Libby Harriman speaking there to Maddie McCosker. The MacArthur River lead and zinc mine out near Borroloola, it's been in operation since 1995. And yet it's taken until now, this month in 2025, for the traditional owners of that region to sign an Indigenous land use agreement with the mining company Glencore. So why has this taken 30 years to achieve? Tom Robertson had a chat to Nicholas Fitzpatrick, who's the executive officer of the GYGM Aboriginal Corporation.
I'm feeling pretty good about it. It's been a long time that, you know, mining operations been happening out there, and, you know, we're very glad to be at the table now.
As you say, the mine's been there a long time. My understanding is 30 years. And these days, you wouldn't be able to open a mine like that without an Indigenous land use agreement. So clearly, this has been done the other way round. Relations haven't always been good between your people and the mining company. Where is that relationship at right now? How are things feeling?
Getting better. I guess, you know, takes time to build trust, and, you know, through this agreement and through our new organization GYGM, we can, you know, build that relationship and build trust over time. So looking forward to working together properly.
You formed GYGM to handle these negotiations more directly and locally. How is that? Does getting the agreement over the line bring a degree of satisfaction that you were able to achieve that with your own group?
Oh yeah, for sure. You know, GYGM, it fills a gap, because, you know, we're aimed at dealing with mining companies, and we'll have a ranger unit through GYGM that does a lot of the work around the mine, environmental work and ecology work, studying everything and fire management. Yeah, also for the cultural heritage, like, you know, the surveys and collecting all that data and having it in an organization based in Borroloola. Yeah, definitely feel a sense of satisfaction with GYGM success, and it looks like we're going to be very busy next year.
As you say, GYGM is on the ground there, and you took over the negotiations, which had been led by the Northern Land Council. What was the involvement of Northern Land Council more recently? Were they involved at all?
Yeah, they're still the, you know, current PBC, and in the beginning, the Northern Land Council pulled us together, and we formed a negotiating team with the, you know, senior TOs and everybody involved. We formed that team, and that was just the direction that we wanted to go down. Northern Land Council still supports us a lot, and we work alongside each other. And, you know, breakaway PBCs, it should be something that's supported a lot into the future, because you get a lot more control on ground, on country, and, you know, build capacity to deal with this stuff instead of it coming out of Darwin all the time. But when it comes to the Northern Land Council, you know, we're still going to be close with our land council. They're still going to be in charge of our land trust.
Are there any details you're able to share about the nature of the land use agreement and the sort of specifics about what you've negotiated with Glencore?
I think that'll come when we do the official event early next year. You know, to get to this point, I definitely understand that the fight has been big and long, and, you know, it's going to keep going well into the future for a whole couple of other generations dealing with mining in our country. But, you know, we're just trying to pull it all together from the past and set it up for the future. And, you know, that we've got this mine here, and we have to work together to, you know, do this job properly. You know, we'd like to be the ones that do the rehabilitation work one day, because, you know, who would do the job better than the people who love that country the most?
That's Nicholas Fitzpatrick speaking to Tom Robinson. And as mentioned, there will be an official larger announcement about this Ilua in the new year. We are fast approaching the 1 o'clock news here on the ABC. A quick look at the weather, and conditions are easing. There's now a final flood warning in place for the MacArthur River. It's now falling, and there's a final flood watch in place for parts of the Barkly and Carpentaria catchments. There's still a few road closures, though. According to Road Report NT website, the Plenty Highway remains impassable between Jervois Station and the Queensland border. The Sandover Highway is closed between Amaroo Elkedra boundary to the Queensland border. The Carpentaria Highway is closed between Cape Crawford and the MacArthur River Mine. The Buchanan Highway is now closed between the Stuart Highway and Dashwood Crossing. And there's a decent list there. There's some of the main ones, but stay up to date via Road Report NT and, of course, your ABC. Let's go to the newsroom, and I'll see you back here in 5 minutes' time for a chat with the Weather Bureau, and then we'll take a look at the biggest stories of the year for the NT Country Hour.
Yeah, g'day, how you going? My name's Jason Moon, owner of NT Tropical Passion Fruit. We're on the farm today, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
Matt Brown with you this afternoon. Happy New Year's Eve. What were the biggest stories of the year for the NT Country Hour? In a moment, I'll share with you the top five stories that you clicked on in 2025. A little trip through the year that was here on the Country Hour. A year where we celebrated our 80th birthday. Let's go to the Weather Bureau first, though. Rebecca Patrick's there this afternoon. And, Beck, there's been some pretty decent rain the last 24 hours up to 9 o'clock this morning. What are some of the best figures?
Yeah, that's right. So yesterday evening we had a pretty decent fall around the central parts of the top end, just north of Catherine. Mount Felix picked up 79 millimetres. In the 24 hours, and Edith Falls Ridge with a 61, as well as Birdie Creek, 57 millimetres in that area. In the Gregory District, Pigeonhole has picked up 59 millimetres, so a decent drop down there as well.
Yeah, a few nice falls in that VRD. Pigeonhole with 59, Birrandoodoo 6, Cattle Creek Station picked up 18, Camfield River 24. Is there more on the way, especially for places like the VRD, given what is now ex-tropical cyclone Hayley? Could it bring some moisture in from the west?
Yes. So, first of all, today we could see some heavier falls across inland parts of the top end again. Maybe that Catherine and through the Arnhem District is a possibility for any slow-moving storms today. But from tomorrow, with ex-Hayley moving a little bit further eastwards towards the NT, we could see some heavier falls through that Victoria River catchment, possibly southern parts of the Daly District, but more likely in the Gregory District and potentially for a couple of days.
Right. I was looking at the Darwin radar and, there's a few storms popping up this afternoon, which is lovely, but I've just checked out the Halls Creek radar over there in the Kimberley and you can see ex-Hayley. There's a lot of moisture there sort of halfway between Halls Creek and Fitzroy Crossing at the moment. And it's heading our way.
Yeah, that's right. So, could see some reasonable rainfall from tomorrow and on Friday as well, probably easing off a bit on Saturday.
Weather report from Bachelor on the text line, pouring here at Bachelor, says someone, 0487991057. There's a few storms around the top end. It's nice.
Yeah, pretty scattered showers and just those storms just starting to fire up now. So, particularly over inland parts, expecting to see those storms during the afternoon and then potentially some more shower activity overnight as well if you're in the coastal areas around the west and north coasts of the top end.
And how are temperatures looking at the moment for those looking to get out and celebrate the New Year's Eve?
So further south, we've seen a few degrees coming off temperatures across the Leicester and Tanami district because it's a bit more cloudy out there today. Temperatures come down a bit there. We are expecting those temperatures to rise a bit as we go in towards the weekend, so from Friday onwards, with maybe a bit of clearance of that cloud developing, with a bit more of a southeasterly flow coming through over the weekend.
Okay. From what I can tell, no one's meant to hit 40 degrees today, which on the 31st of December, that's pretty good.
Yeah, not too bad. It may be short-lived.
Understood. And shout out to Large Manu, 38 degrees. That's pretty warm, but you might be getting some rain. You might be getting some rain, which would be lovely. Is there anything else that we should be aware of on this last day of 2025?
No, I think that's about it. We did finalise that flood watch that we did have out. So, there are obviously some roads still impacted by that rain a few days ago, but, they're not expecting further flooding.
All right. Happy New Year's Eve to you, Beck. And thanks so much for everything this year on the country. I really appreciate it.
No worries. Happy New Year's to you too.
It is 10 past one and you are tuned into the Country Hour. It's our last show of 2025. It's my last show for quite a few weeks, actually. Fiona Broome and Charles Geary will be looking after you in the coming days and weeks. What were the biggest stories on the NT Country Hour for 2025? We'll bring you our top five countdown next.
G'day, I'm Brad George, and I'm captain of the Humpty Doo Fire Brigade, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
Yeah, on the Country Hour today, we are counting down the top five stories for 2025. Now, we don't get radio ratings here in the Northern Territory, but we do know what you've been clicking on. So at number five, it was a real estate story with a difference that had you clicking. This story was in September. We broke the news that the iconic Larimer Hotel, along with two crocodiles out the back, had been sold. And we spoke to the new owner, Laura Raglis, who said the town, of course, had made global headlines years prior, following the disappearance of Paddy Moriarty, but she was looking forward to creating a new chapter.
One of my big things is I want to put great food, homemade food, that back on the Stuarts Highway. Between Adelaide and Darwin, there's not too many places that our truckies and all can stop and eat decent food. And we're all about homestyle cooking and everything at Stuartsville, and we'll replicate it here. And that's, on top of the crocodile, that's a big part of my passion.
The Larimer Hotel, the Pink Panther Hotel, has now become quite famous after the disappearance of Paddy Moriarty and the various podcasts, books, documentaries about it. How does it feel to buy into a town with such a mysterious and strange history?
Well, with respect to Paddy, and I met all the locals yesterday, there's only three left, like Fran, Carl, Bobby. I think I get a good inclination about how Paddy went missing, but one day maybe someone will know the truth. But, I'm up here to start a new chapter and, work on it from there.
I think one thing everyone wants to know, will the famous Pink Panther remain a fixture of the hotel there?
Yes, it will. And come the new season, Sneaky Sam will come out and have a couple of day tours where people can see him. And we've got Agro, our little freshwater, who's 1.4 metres. So, and we plan to fill up the aviaries and that again with native birds and all the rest of it.
That is Laura Raglis, the new owner of the Larimer Hotel, the Pink Panther, and those crocodiles out the back. That was our fifth biggest story of 2025. And 2026 could be a really big year for that Larimer region. The pub's getting some extra love, and a large agricultural development is set to get going on the outskirts of town. Larimer in 2026, it could be big. It is 13 past one, and you are tuned into the Country Hour, and we're counting down the top five stories for 2025.
Diamonds are forever. They are all I need to please me.
At number four, we had a story about diamonds. Well, it was actually a story about the lack of diamonds. It's been 5 years since the famous Argyle Diamond Mine closed near the WA-NT border, and plans to restart the Merlin Diamond Mine near Borroloola, well, it bit the dust this year. On the Country Hour, we brought you news that La Carpa Diamonds, the owner of that Merlin project, went into voluntary administration. Diamond specialist John Chapman told us the future does not look so bright for this industry, and there's currently no diamonds being mined in Australia at all.
We don't at the moment. There are a few on the books, sort of in the exploratory stages at the moment. But it's a shame because the Merlin one was probably the more advanced of them all because it had been mined at some stage. In fact, it has the honour of producing Australia's largest rough diamond at 104 carats some years ago. So it does have the production, but clearly it's just not economic, probably because of the depth of it. It's a rather small pipe. There was a group of them, and I think part of the intention of the new owners was to do a sort of combine them all into a super pit to try and make it economic. But trying to make any mine economic, diamond mines, in the current climate is rather difficult. There's nothing that is looking commercially encouraging at this stage. And that's not limited to Australia either. I think sort of globally, the diamond market's a bit depressed. Prices for rough diamonds have gone down. And that's not good news for any explorers trying to make a commercial venture out of any findings. And the diamonds are there. They have been in all sorts of places. But the key thing is, can they be economically extracted?
Why is the global diamond market, why has it come down so much in recent years?
It's probably a combination of a couple of factors, but possibly the dominant one is the advent of synthetic diamonds, which have developed in leaps and bounds in the last 10 years and represent about 50% of sales for many jewellers. So that has to be having an impact on the rough the use of them, but also as a result of that, the prices as well have been coming down because the synthetic diamonds are selling for a fraction of the cost of the rough ones. So that, I think, coupled with just a general, probably societal shift from some of these more luxury goods during these times of difficulty.
That is diamond specialist John Chapman speaking to us earlier in the year about the Merlin Diamond Mine. Now, if you are tuning in, this is the Country Hour. It is our last show for the year, and we are counting down the top stories of 2025. We do not get radio ratings here in the Northern Territory, but we do know what you've been clicking on. So at number three, and this news broke just the other day, the Beetaloo aggregation of stations. It sold for $300 million plus the value of about 90,000 head of cattle. It was bought by a consolidated pastoral company, CPC, and is easily the biggest pastoral sale in the Northern Territory's history. I spoke to Frank Peacock from Heron Todd White, who said, yes, it was a record breaker and a very interesting sale.
There's a bit to know about Beetaloo as well, because it's such a, I guess, it's nearly unique, but in the way that it's been developed. So it's sort of the first one out of the blocks in terms of property that's predominantly fully developed. And yeah, the sale price, it sounds like there's a bit of work to do on the analysis, but it sounds like a price that tells you that CPC is very confident in the future of the cattle industry up here.
Yeah, so $300 million plus the value of the herd. This sale is easily the biggest pastoral station deal in the Northern Territory's history.
Yeah.
Australia-wide, where does this rate, do you think?
In terms of lump sum, I mean, there are others certainly up around that level, but for the NT, yep, two leases, definitely a record breaker. And I was just looking, Matt, at the last sale in the Barclay, which is something valuers always do to see, okay, what did the region last produce in terms of a sale? And that would have been Banker Banker and Baran Chile back in, when was that, 2023?
Yeah, that's when Gina Reinhart sold.
Yeah, Malcolm Harris bought that one. And so I've just done a bit of, you know, I'm on holidays, Matt, so I've sort of done a bit of the back of the envelope, but if you did strip it back to a dollar per AE, just fenced and watered, I think that the sale, this current one, is probably going to show like probably close to a 45% increase over that, what's that, two years, 8 months since Brunchilli.
That is Frank Peacock from Heron Todd White speaking to us about the record-breaking sale of the Beetaloo aggregation of stations. On the Country Hour today, we are counting down the top five stories for 2025. At number two, it was a story about bananas. After Cyclone Fina swept through the top end in November, a lot of you texted this show wanting to know how the NT's biggest banana farm had fared during that Category 3 cyclone. Farm manager Mark Smith was very kind to allow the Country Hour to come out and visit the farm and see the damage firsthand.
I think it's probably better than I thought in some ways. Anything without any fruit hanging up lasted pretty well. You know, obviously, if you've got 40 kilos hanging around your neck, you're going to fall over a little bit easier than if you haven't. But some of these bays, like the one we're standing out here now, it's pretty well, like 40% of those plants are over. And I'd say we've definitely lost 40% plus of our fruit that we can harvest.
Yeah, where we're standing, there's banana trees over, and the bunches that were in their blue bags are on the ground. Are they salvageable at all, that fruit?
No. There's a couple of reasons why. I mean, you know, they've been over too long, so they haven't been fed properly, and the sunburn, and you don't want them, you don't want to harvest anything that's been in sort of runoff water either. So, yeah, you've only got a very short time to pick up what you can.
So this is the Northern Territory's largest banana farm that supplies nearly 100% of the top end's banana needs. What's the damage here going to mean to consumers?
Oh, it means that we're going to have to access fruit from our other farms in North Queensland to supply locally until we can get back up on track. And it just takes a bit of time. Obviously, we can't plant everything at once to try and get the numbers up, because we'd pick everything at once and then have nothing. We have to be pretty...
You have to stage your planting.
Yeah, we have to stagger the planting so we do spread our harvest over the year if we can. And that's the biggest thing. We will try and up it a little bit more if we can, if the plants are available. Tissue culture plants, you really should order them 12 months in advance. So whether we can get extra plants, I don't know yet.
So when would you hope to be pumping out commercial quantities again from this farm?
Oh, look, as I said, in 3 months, I reckon we'll have, you know, we'll be supplying fruit from here, but it won't be 100% local.
Mm.
You know, we needed all these bananas to actually supply locally, and that's what we're working on. So it's going to be eventually we'll get back to, you know, close to 100% supply locally as we can. But it's going to be a staggered journey, I suppose. It's going to have to get fruit, and we'll lessen the fruit from Queensland as we get more fruit here.
Yeah.
You know, to be honest, it's hard to say, put a number on it, but look, I'd say it's going to be at least 8 months before we can actually supply.
Till you're back to full production for the farm.
Yeah. At least, yeah.
That is Mark Smith from Darwin Fruit Farm speaking to me after Cyclone Fina swept through in November. And as you said, bananas have been coming in from Queensland ever since, and hopefully consumers haven't noticed any changes. Very tough on that farm, though, and I look forward to visiting next year in 2026 as that production ramps up again. So that was our second biggest story of the year. What was number one? You'll find out next.
Join the ultimate party this New Year's Eve across the ABC with a massive lineup, including Melanie C, plus the famous Sydney Fireworks, audio described on the ABC Listen app.
Happy New Year!
On ABC TV and iView and the ABC Listen app.
On the Country Hour today, we are counting down the top five stories for 2025. We don't get radio ratings here in the NT, but we do know what you've been clicking on. So in 2025, the biggest story, a story that kept updating throughout the year, was anything we did about Trump, tariffs, trade, and beef. In his Liberation Day speech at the start of April, Donald Trump, remember this, he put Australian beef into the headlines.
Australia bans, and they're wonderful people and wonderful everything, but they ban American beef, yet we imported $3 billion of Australian beef from them just last year alone. They won't take any of our beef. They don't want it because they don't want it to affect their farmers. And you know what? I don't blame them, but we're doing the same thing right now, starting about midnight tonight, I would say.
Now, President Trump was right. We are wonderful people, but he was wrong about beef. As explained by the Country Hour, Australia did not have a ban on American beef as long as it was sourced from cattle that were born, raised, and slaughtered in the United States. The problem was the US was trying to have that access expanded to include beef from Canadian and Mexican cattle that were being brought into the US for processing and then exported. That was raising biosecurity concerns. That was the major sticking point. In July this year, the Australian government approved that extension. Has that led to a flood of beef imports coming in to Australia from North America? Well, the answer is no. According to ABS trade data, I can tell you this afternoon that there's been 18 tonnes of beef come in from Canada and there's been 150 kilos of beef imported from the United States. I'm intrigued. Who brought in the 150 kilos? Sounds like something you could do for a fancy party. Meanwhile, Trump's tariff war had all kinds of consequences. For example, in March, China, well, it put the pen back in the drawer and did not renew the export licenses for hundreds of American abattoirs to send beef to China. Those abattoirs are still waiting to get the tick of approval. And so what happened next? Well, it opened up a big door for Australian grain-fed beef. MLA's Murray Davis told us that Aussie beef stole the show this year at the Shanghai Trade Show.
Matthew, right now, Australia is absolutely in centre stage. While Australia is not a major exporter in terms of Chinese total imports, we do dominate the premium end of the market. So the grain-fed and the chilled meat, Australia dominates. And our major competitor over the last few years has been the United States. But with the trade disputes that are going on between China and the US is effectively out of the market at the moment. So Australia is in absolutely prime position to supply premium grade, top of the range meats to Chinese consumers.
So in the end, despite all the talk of tariffs and Trump and trade, 2025 was a great year for Aussie cattle producers. Those who weren't in drought. For those with green grass and stock to sell, prices this year were good. In fact, the record money for processor cows and heavy steers, it was amazing to see. Australia produced a record amount of beef this year. We exported a record amount of beef this year. Donald Trump's tariff, now gone. That got dumped in November. And 2026 is shaping up well. Now, just finally to wrap up the year, I wanted to pay tribute to some of our favourites here at the Country Hour who are sadly no longer with us. And I'm sure it's been a tough Christmas period for the families of these people. At the start of the year, we lost a true icon of the NT's cattle industry, Ian McBean, who died aged 93. In May, former president of the NT Cattlemen's Association and a legend of the North's beef industry, David Warriner, he passed at the age of 59. In June, the NT lost one of its legends of the horticultural sector, Chris Nathaniel. He ran Tropiculture Australia for nearly 50 years, and I reckon he trained up every single rural reporter who has ever come to the Northern Territory. We miss him a lot. In recent weeks, the Territory lost one of its real characters in Zico Illich, who was the face and voice of Fisherman's Wharf and the Darwin Seafood Market for so many years. And of course, in recent weeks, the sad loss of country music star and former administrator Ted Egan. His state memorial service will be held in Alice Springs in February. I'm tipping they won't have enough room at the convention centre in Alice Springs. As mentioned, Fiona Broome will be hosting the program tomorrow. I'm taking a few weeks off. All the best for 2026, folks, and keep it rural. Take me.